For many Americans, meat takes up most of the plate at dinner and lunchtime, and often even breakfast. To produce enough meat to keep up with this demand, farmers have radically industrialized the way that they raise, feed, shelter, and slaughter their livestock. In his documentary, American Meat, Graham Merriweather takes a look at how the farmers struggle to keep up with the demand and how it has hurt both them and the quality of the meat. The film is opens at 7 p.m. tonight at Cinema Village, and it brings Graham Merriweather to our show today. Hello.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
So how much meat do Americans eat each year?
Well, the number of the amount of consumption has been going down each of the last 5 years. The chicken, pork, and beef, it's close to, I believe it's 60 billion pounds of meat each year. Or I think it's 57 billion pounds.
And per capita, how does that compare to other parts of the world?
We are very high, if not the highest.
And do we have any idea why? Is it just simply that it's available to us?
Oh, that's a great question. I feel like for a lot of Americans, having meat on the plate is a sign of success, a sign of prosperity. And so when you culturally linked having a whole chicken breast or a whole chicken on the dinner table to success, then to put that in every meal means to be, you know, successful at every meal, I suppose.
So I guess the ultimate success now for people who have become vegans is to get past that.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people are looking to redefine what the plate looks like.
A woman you interviewed for the film, Jean Kilpatrick, said she raises her own chickens, but she could never kill or eat any of them. And then she admits that she eats grocery store chicken regularly. So why do you think that is? Why is there such a disconnect between meat and the animals that they come from?
Well, I think our great-grandparents' generation, everyone knew how to raise vegetables and how to raise animals and how to slaughter a chicken or a hog or even a steer. And then as we've moved from rural areas to urban areas, what you've seen is a complete lack of knowledge in how agriculture and food production works. And so people are so disconnected that they could eat something from a styrofoam package but not actually butcher and kill an animal and turn it into dinner.
Even if they have one in their backyard.
Even if they have one in their backyard.
Well, so how is most meat produced today in this country? What is a typical I would have thought it was a ranch, but it's often not a ranch, isn't it?
Sure. It's different for different species of animals. So for chickens and hogs, they're raised indoors in what are called commodity hog barns or commodity chicken barns. So you have thousands of animals in one place that are indoors and never get to go outside. And for cattle, they're raised outside in feed yards. Well, it's a complicated process because all cattle are actually born out on grass, and then they're weaned off their mother about 8 or 9 months, and then they go to the feed yards.
And this industrialization is the norm?
Yeah, about 98% of all the meat that's produced is coming from these types of farms.
When did that shift occur?
It started in the 1950s when you had chicken start to be produced indoors. There was sort of after World War II, there was the introduction of penicillin. There was the introduction of sort of this mindset that we can produce, in the modernistic view, that we can produce whatever we want, however we want, and make agriculture like a machine.
Well, in the old days, it took more land to produce the same sort of thing now that we can produce in tight spaces. And a lot of farmland has been taken over for housing and other things. So I guess that the two have worked hand in hand.
Sure. I mean, the amount of land that you need to raise those chickens and pigs, it seems like a smaller amount of land when you're talking about in an industrial scale. But one thing that's not seen is all of the feed that they get fed. And so all of that feed is actually thousands and thousands and millions of acres of corn and soybeans across the Midwest.
Has the product, the meat itself, changed in taste or quality from the meat pre-50s, the sort of meat that our parents and grandparents used to eat regularly?
Well, I would say it has. You know, when the animals are outside, for instance, some of the farmers we have in the film, like Joel Salatin, he raises chickens outside. They're eating grasshoppers and bugs, and so they actually have a totally different diet than the animals that are indoors, and that means that the meat is going to be more flavorful.
And in some ways, he's the focus of your film, Joel Salatin. He's rather atypical. He has some homemade inventions like the Eggmobile and the Piggerator that he uses on his farm. He calls himself the lunatic farmer. Do his neighbors, the farmers near him, think he's crazy?
I think his farmers definitely thought he was crazy about 10 years ago, and now more and more neighbors are starting to come around.
He's become a success?
Oh, because he's become a success, because there's so many people that actually want to travel out to his farm that the roads that are around Polyface Farms in Virginia are now getting more and more traveled. So people are starting to see that you can bring people back out to farms. People want to know where their food comes from.
So tell us about his methods.
Well, Joel does what's called rotational grazing, intensive rotational grazing. And what he does is mimics the way that animals work together in nature. So on the Serengetis in Africa, you have the wildebeests are followed by birds. And the reason why birds follow large herbivores in nature is because herbivores leave behind a bunch of manure. And then insects develop in that manure, and the birds eat those insects. And so he set up a model on his farm using portable electric fencing that actually mimics those models and makes it a very economically successful farm.
We have a soundbite.
Everything that we raise here, we want to provide it a habitat that allows it to fully express its physiological distinctiveness. Respecting that a pig has a plow on the end of its nose, so we use it. A chicken has claws and a beak. Why? So in the industrial system, we can cut them off? No! So they can scratch, so they can peck, so they can be... You see what I'm saying?
So he's using the animals, actually, as a way to plow the land.
Exactly. And what he'll say, which often draws laughter when we screen the film, is, he's celebrating the pigness of the pig or the chickenness of the chicken, which is very true. The animals are doing what they're meant to do.
Many people complain that pork is much leaner today than it used to be, and that affects its taste. How did we wind up with all this very, very lean pork?
Well, in the 1980s, 1990s, the pork industry decided that they wanted to try to get in on the health craze, the sort of lean, create a leaner animal. So they started breeding all of the fat systematically out of the pigs. And what that did was create a pig that essentially had very little fat and very little flavor. And the other thing it did was it created pigs that were actually very nervous and had a lot of problems when they were in the barns that way. So now the industry looks like they're trying to correct that. But if you get into the grass-based systems, these are big, fatty animals that have a lot of flavor.
They also create a methane, don't they? And that has become a problem. Seriously pollutant because they're kept in these tight spaces?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a pig produces about 8 times more excrement than a human, and if you have about 10,000 pigs in a barn, then all of a sudden you've got a lot of manure. We, in fact, had one of our cameras break while we were filming on a conventional hog farm because there was so much fecal particulate in the air that this tape mechanism shut down.
Wow. It was like dust.
It's like a haze. It's really, really horrible. I'd say the food system would change in a couple of months if most people could go to see some of these places.
I'm talking with Graham Merriweather about a film called American Meat, which opens tonight at the Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. Chuck Wirtz was a conventional pig farmer, and then he tried raising organic pork. How much of an investment does that changeover require?
It's an investment of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And actually Whole Foods was looking to source some organic pork from him, and they helped with some of the investment on that. But it's a huge, and one of the things I just sort of said a blanket statement about conventional farms being horrible places, and that's true as far as the smell in the air. But I want to say that the farmers working there are wonderful people, and we should always blame the system, not the people in the system, because they're just doing what they need to keep their farms going.
You're saying they're kind of forced into working this way.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in a situation where you have these large integrators like a Tyson, a Smithfield, a Purdue, and what they do is they get all of the farmers in the area to convert over. And so if you're an independent producer, it makes it almost impossible to stay in business. So we really have to make sure that we blame the system and not the people in the system, because the people in the system are very good people.
In fact, you have a number of instances where there are these small towns where they've become kind of ghost towns because of the industrialization process?
Absolutely. I was talking to Chuck Wirtz a few months ago, and he told me when he was a little boy, they had a two-row cultivator. and a cultivator basically makes all the weeds on a field go away on the rows. And 5 years ago, they had a 24-row cultivator. So when you go from a 2-row cultivator to a 24-row cultivator, what that means is you need 12 times less people. It means you have 12 times less hardware stores, grocery stores, schools, police departments. And we're seeing a huge erosion of population in rural America.
In North Carolina, Johnny Glasson and Sam Talley are deep in debt as a result of industrialization. Is this how it is for a lot of farmers now?
Absolutely. The farmers in our system right now, our farmers are forced to take on almost all the risk. They have to take out a loan for hundreds of thousands of dollars for the equipment. Then they have to raise the animals. And when you go to the grocery store, if you buy conventional spicy hot chicken wings and you put those in your push cart, the farmers only get about 5 to 8 cents of that dollar that you're spending,
They really just raising those chickens for a big company? They don't own the chickens, do they?
Right. The farmers don't even own the chickens. They're a small part in a long chain, but they are truly doing the most important work in that chain, and they're only getting a very small percentage of the food dollar. And we as a country need to celebrate our farmers. We also need to pay our farmers more money.
So Chuck Wirtz decided that he was going to raise organic pork, and the whole thing fell through. Why?
Well, in 2008, we had a serious economic crisis. And we also had an agricultural crisis. And what happened was the price of grain went very, very high. And when the price of grain went very high, Whole Foods and some other companies decided that it was too risky to invest in organic pork production because organic grain is very expensive. And so they decided that it wasn't the right time to make that investment.
So is there a lack of demand for organic pork?
I don't think there's a lack of demand. I think the challenge is that the grain is so expensive that the prices would almost be double of what a conventional would be.
Well, then if the meat market is so volatile and unreliable, how was Joel Salatin able to develop his wholly unconventional method in this economic climate?
Well, Joel's pigs are eating a much less amount of grain than the organic pigs would be. Because one thing that's sort of complicated, but it's an important differentiation, is that organic and local are different systems.
And you have to pay to get the organic label, don't you? It can be rather expensive.
Very expensive, and there's a lot of paperwork. So Joel's pigs, they're getting finished in the forest. They're eating acorns, and that actually cuts his feed cost by 40%. So he's able to sell directly to his customers and sort of bypass the economic struggles that faced the organic industry in 2008.
You look at the role fossil fuels play in conventional farming. Pesticides, fertilizer, gasoline, all farm essentials are based on fossil fuels. Does organic grass-based farming help lessen that reliance?
Absolutely. One of the things that you're seeing as we move towards more local food systems, there's a story that we tell in our film where Polyface Farms begins to source all the pork to one restaurant, a Chipotle restaurant, and basically it's because they're only trucking those animals 80 miles to get to the restaurant, get to the slaughterhouse and then get to the restaurant, whereas before they're trucking them 2,000 miles. So you can imagine that if we were to see the cost of energy go up to $200, $300 a barrel like most predict by 2020, that if we set up regional local food systems, we're going to save billions of dollars in gasoline.
Is organic meat a niche market only now available to people who can afford it?
It's a niche market right now, but that's rapidly changing. You're starting to see contracts happen between schools and local farms. You're starting to see farmers markets pop up all across the country. There's a real movement that's happening.
But can we ever get to a point where sustainable farming can satisfy the demand for all the meat that Americans eat?
That question is dependent upon whether or not a lot of the American people want to start farming. The niche production or the organic local food systems require more labor. So if people want to get into farming and want to start that type of a lifestyle, then we will be able to meet that demand.
So we're going to need people going back into farming. How many people going back into farming? Then land has to become available as well.
Right. There's a lot of things that would have to fall into place. So it's hard to say what the future brings. I personally feel like there is a shift happening. I think a lot of people want to start, even if it's just raising chickens in your backyard like Gene Kilpatrick, or maybe it's planting a tomato seed in a community garden. A lot of people are starting to want to get back to farming, to get back to connecting to their food. And so we'll see. I mean, it just depends on what happens.
Well, it's estimated that 4 million people would have to go into farming. That's a lot of people. Despite the fact that right now there's high unemployment in the country.
We have 310 million Americans, so if we had 4 million people go in, that's... Now, farming's not going to be for everybody, but I think it's for 2 or 3 out of 100 people, you know? So we'll see what happens. I certainly think... I had an opportunity to work on a farm myself for a couple summers, and it was a very rewarding experience, getting my hands dirty, working all day long. You know, I say that the best showers I ever had in my life were showers after a day of working out, harvesting potatoes or tomatoes or whatever it may be.
Graham Merriweather's film, American Meat, opens tonight at 7 o'clock at Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Pleasure. Thanks, Leonard.